It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
Oh, it's a world of news. No hour number two echo today, Sean?
I had a lot going on back here. I had to get our guests on the line. I had to think about some stuff that wasn't show-related. I had a lot going on.
I just want to say those kids in Hamburg, Germany, who listen every day and they comment, they text right away about the hour number two echo.
Yeah.
They're going to be very disappointed.
I know. And I feel bad. I do. I really do. Because that's like, it's a what do they call it? When you tune in because
benchmark.
You know. Benchmark. Programming.
Yeah, it is. Okay, so for all the kids in Hamburg, they're college, or they call it university. They all attend university in Hamburg, and then they gather around in the evening, because it's nighttime there in Germany, and they listen to the show every day. And the hour number two echo is the best part of the show, they tell me. So
prefer,
for all you kids in Hamburg,
bacon
for all
Hamburg,
you Hamburgers,
yeah.
This is hour number two. That wasn't very good. Dang it. It created an international incident. Okay, before I get into the Fast 15, so I get, I never use all my vacation. So I carry 2 weeks over every year, and then I get, like 5 weeks because I've been here for so long. So I have 7 weeks of vacation. I've only used one. And I got to start burning some because I have to use 4 weeks by the end of the year or else I'm going to lose whatever I don't take of those 4 weeks. And so I'm trying to look for some opportunities. And I got a call from my friend Tom Nelson, who you know from the Outdoor Line on Cairo Radio. And he said, brother, we're going to get you out fishing. You need to catch your first Puget Sound salmon. And Tom took me up to Sitka. Brock and I went to Sitka with Tom 2 years ago, and I caught my first fish ever up there. But so that's why I took Friday off, but it was not without controversy. Tom Nelson joins us live here on the Dory Monson Show. Good afternoon, sir.
Reporting to you from under the bus, Dory. Yes. How you doing, my friend?
I'm not throwing you under the bus. Are you kidding me?
I deserve to be under the bus.
No.
Open a day of salmon season is like having a bunch of presents underneath a tree.
Yeah.
And having, and having the Grinch say you can't open them. You got to wait. You can't open them. You got to wait.
Well, and you told me, be on the boat, Everett Marina, be on the boat at 5 a.m. That was the instruction you gave me. So here was the tactical error that I made, Tom. I thought the McDonald's that was close to my house, I thought it was 24 hours. And I sat at the drive-through thing for about 3 minutes before I realized, oh, they're not open at 4:40 or 4:35. So now I'm thinking, okay, I got to get up there because I've got to be there at 5. And now I'm flying because I don't want to be late. I hate being late. And but the thing that was a little jarring was just as I was pulling into the marina parking lot at 5:04 a.m., a very agitated Tom Nelson calls me and gives me a little upbraiding for that.
Did you ever see the wonderful classic film A River Runs Through It, starring Brad Pitt and Tom Skerritt?
I know I saw it. I can't remember one second.
In Montana.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was a fly fishing family in Montana.
Right.
And they're kind enough to extend a fishing invitation to a shirt tail relative, right? And he was late to come fishing. I think before we dig further into this, I think you've got to go. You've got to get on Netflix and watch A River Runs Through It and see where, it's kind of,
You were telling me on Friday that you had no respect for fly fishermen.
Well, in Montana, I do. I'm not crazy about Washington State fly anglers, right? But in Montana, you've got all those blue ribbon fly fishers. Out here, we're salmon anglers, Dory. We're salmon and halibut and wing cod and rockfish.
I got you. Okay.
You can't catch flies. You can't catch those with flies.
But here's why I'm accepting full 100% responsibility, because punctuality is a huge part of my life. And when I was coaching basketball, the girls for a 7:15 game, they had to be in the gym by 5:30 because I wanted them to watch the JV game before them because it builds a program and makes the kids feel good. If they walked in at 5:30 and 5 seconds, they had to sit the first half of the varsity game. There was no option to that. I am all about punctuality, and I violated my own rule on your Christmas Day on Friday.
So I was feeling the heat because open a day, you don't know what you're going to get, and you right. don't know where the fish are going to be. And so I wanted so bad to get you a fish. I wanted to get you your first Washington fish worse than you wanted to catch your first Washington fish. Mm-hmm. So I got to the boat at 4 o'clock, and my other guys got there at 4:40, you know, my doc, Christopher Beard, and his son. And of course, you know, Lauren Devon's a Harbor Marine, and they're all Johnny on the spot. And it's like, oh, okay, waiting for the big celebrity. And I go, no, it's not like that. It's not like that. It's just, you know. So, but I was thrilled. I didn't make you sit out the first half, dude. You got the first fish, and it turned out to be the biggest one of the day. And it turned out to make a little dinner for you on Saturday night.
Oh, the smoked Traeger preparation. And then we prepared the crab exactly as you instructed and had a salmon and crab dinner for my whole family. It was beautiful. It was a wonderful thing. Go ahead.
There's no more quintessential Pacific Northwest dinner than having a fresh salmon and everybody sitting around and it sharing the work of cracking the crab and eating it, and nobody's saying a word, and everybody's happy and content with a mouthful of crab followed by a mouthful of salmon. It's one of my favorite things to do for friends and family that come over is serving that. You can't buy that. It's not a meal you can buy, dude.
So all I'm saying is I accept full 100% responsibility, and I actually brought you on, not to throw you under the bus, but to apologize and let you know that if you honor me again with being on your boat, I guarantee I will not be 1 second late.
It's not, you don't have to stand on invite, brother. You are welcome anytime. And I'm sorry for being Captain Grumpy, you know, to get off the dock, but I just can't wait to get off the dock, man. It takes so much preparation to get the boat ready and everything. I can't wait to get off the dock every morning. As long as I breathe air, that getting off the dock in the morning is one of my favorite parts of the day. Just let's go. You don't know what you're going to get. You're going to go out there and get them. So.
I mean, you were joking about me being the late big celebrity. When you're out on Puget Sound, you are the big celebrity. I mean, the boat's going by. Oh, they love Tom. Hey, I listen to the Outdoor Line. Your phone's going off like a Vegas slot machine, and everybody's talking about what they just caught, and you're asking them, how deep was your line, and you're exchanging information, and it was impressive to watch. I like that.
It is just, it's quite the salmon subculture out there.
Yeah.
Because we're all, you know, you're sharing information with your buddies, and, you know, you're the rest of the fleet. You're kind of against the rest of the fleet, and both these guys are your team, and, you know, we're sharing information. But the cool thing is, and I feel so lucky to be able to do this with Rob Ensley and Joe Pyburn, and formerly with Robbie Tobeck, who you met that day as well.
Sure.
And just to be able to do that on Saturday morning on the Outdoor Line, we love doing what we're doing, and Lord willing, we'll get to keep doing it again, and Lord willing, you will come again, you can be as late as you want, and I won't say anything.
No, I will never be late again. I would rather be 15 minutes early than 1 second late. That's my policy, and I will abide by it from now on. All right, Tom, it was a great time. I really appreciate it, man.
Dude, thank you so much. I'm so glad you had a great dinner for your family, and we'll talk again soon, my friend.
You can hear Tom Nelson, The Outdoor Line, every Saturday morning on our sister station, 710 ESPN Seattle. Also, theoutdoorline.com. All right, up next in the Fastest 15. Hey, how about this? We have found the perfect Seattle mayoral candidate. Because so many people in Seattle, not you, because you listen to this radio show and you probably have a somewhat responsible life, but there are so many people in Seattle who are deadbeats. And socialists are, by nature and by necessity, socialists are deadbeats. Unless they're fake socialists or fake Marxists. You know, like the woman who started BLM and then bought several million-dollar homes for family members and herself, and then said, okay, I'm done with BLM. That's a fake Marxist who uses the gullibility of dumb people to believe that she's sincere. But in Seattle, we have a lot of deadbeats. A lot of people who, you know, are, even though they're working, they're taking advantage of the rent moratorium. Well, the Seattle mayoral candidate, who's collected a lot in those democracy vouchers, which is another tremendous ripoff, Andrew Grant Houston is this guy's name. He's already raised over $400,000, much of it from democracy vouchers. Well, it turns out our friend Jason Rantz reported last night, got this exclusively. Jason texted me last night and said, hey, you got to check out the story that I have here. That this guy who has collected over $400,000 for his mayoral campaign, he stopped paying rent on his Capitol Hill apartment at the start of the pandemic. Even though he had a job, he was an intern policy manager for communist-leaning Seattle City Councilwoman Teresa Mosqueda. And the property management company said they asked him about how much he owes, and it turns out he acknowledged that he had an outstanding balance at the time of $15,000, and now it's ballooned to more than $20,000, almost $21,000. And landlords cannot evict tenants because of the moratorium during the pandemic. And so here you got a guy who wants to run the city of Seattle, who wants to run a multi-billion-dollar budget for the city, and he can't even manage his own finances to pay his rent. And you guaranteed, I guarantee that this guy is hoping that there will be some communist form of rent forgiveness. So even if he owes somebody else $21,000 right now, he's hoping that some politicians will come along and say, oh, all of you who are in arrears, just don't pay it. You know, like the people who are trying to get the student loans forgiven and all of that. So just keep in mind that this guy, Andrew Grant Houston, who wants to be the next Seattle mayor, is a rent deadbeat who is not paying his landlord and has over almost $21,000 in unpaid rent. I'll say it again. He sounds like the perfect Seattle mayoral candidate. All right, next up in the fastest 15. So we were telling you last hour, Jenny Durkin, she has this new campaign that she launched on Friday to try to welcome people back to downtown Seattle and to just try to get things going again, because this has been a devastating year and a half.
With Welcome Back Weeks, we want to think beyond one-time events. We want to recreate and rebirth our areas in the downtown and in our neighborhoods.
Rebirth? How do you rebirth? But she's serious about this.
To continue the momentum that we have building, being the first city in America to get to 70% vaccination rate, we're now over 80%, to really focus our work on not just building back, but building back more equitably and just.
Oh. We're going to build back more equitably and just, yay! All right.
To continue this momentum, the city, together with our partners, the Downtown Seattle Association, will launch Welcome Back Weeks. These are going to be 2 weeks of events, performances, promotions happening downtown Seattle in July and September. It's going to be fun. People, join in.
This sounds like a blast. And again, I don't know why it's in July and September. Why not August? What's wrong with August? What did August ever do to you? But we're all looking forward to Welcome Back Seattle. And Sean DeTore decided to put it to music.
Welcome Back We want to think beyond one-time events. Welcome back. We want to recreate and rebirth our areas in the downtown. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. These are going to be 2 weeks of events, performances, promotions happening. Welcome back. Welcome back weeks. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back weeks. It's going to be fun. People, join in.
I just realized we're all sweat hogs. That's what's happened now. We're all sweat hogs, and Mr. Kater is, as Boom Boom Washington would say, and Jenny Durkin is Mr. Kater. All right, nice job, Sean. I like that.
Hey, thanks.
Good stuff, man. All right, next up in the Fastest 15. So, Nicole, this was your favorite audio of the day, I know. They talked about at the Olympics 5 years ago now, because they were supposed to have them in 20, but now they've moved them to 21, that there was just a stunning number of condoms given out to the athletes. And it turns out that the Olympics, they're all, you know, young, fit, beautiful people. Most of them are beautiful, if you're that young and fit. And it turns out at the Olympics, people tend to, what's the phrase, Nicole? I'm too old. Is it hook up?
Yes. I suppose, yeah. Hook up is one of the words. I was going to say have sex.
No, isn't hook up? And there might be kids listening. Hook up, okay, is the same thing, but it's a little softer, right?
Right, but you're going to have to use the term for the beds. That's what they're called.
They're called what? Oh,
anti-sex.
Yeah, so the word was that they, in the athlete's village, that they built the beds essentially on cardboard, because that way they couldn't handle any, everybody knows.
Rocking and rolling.
yeah, no rocking and rolling in the bed. Beds are for sleeping, is what they're telling us at the Tokyo Olympics. Well, and so I read a story about it this morning, and it said, lustful Olympic athletes should think twice before making the bed rock. In Tokyo, the world's best sports competitors are set to spend their nights on cardboard beds allegedly designed to collapse under the weight of movement to discourage sex amid COVID-19. Now, of course, the other thing they could do is they could just put a shower curtain on every single traditional bed. Jay Inslee would have approved of that. But they're really afraid that they've already had some COVID outbreaks, and they're afraid that it's going to be widespread. So they've set up 18,000 cardboard beds for the Olympics. Now, there's only one problem with this. Already the athletes are trying to think of a way to get around this, because they've been waiting for this for a long, long time. And so one of them, he's an Irish gymnast, Riz McClanahan. And Riz McClanahan, he was really hoping to meet some nice young ladies.
To be clear, he's saying they don't have to get around it. And I'm pretty sure that people have found other places to do that.
But to show that his bed is safe mm-hmm. for such activities, he is in this video, he's jumping on his cardboard bed to let all the ladies know that it's safe as can be.
In today's episode of Fake News at the Olympic Games, the beds are meant to be anti-sex. They're made out of cardboard, yes, but apparently they're meant to break at any sudden movements. It's fake. Fake news.
Of course. fake news.
Fake news.
Fake news. Of course, he's a gymnast. So he probably weighs about 105 pounds himself. Those guys are tiny. But
honestly, I just love his accent.
Yeah, who does? I know. Irish.
And we don't talk about that.
And all of that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
You give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. Coming up next, we're going to talk with the local police chief who is sounding the alarm on what these new bills that were passed by a radical legislature, what they're going to mean for community safety. Details. You cannot afford to miss this. It is next here on the Dory Monson Show.
Saturday in the park. I think it was the 4th of July.
Well, here in the park, but also all around the state, we have some storm clouds a-brewing, and that's because of a radical leftist state legislature that is almost certainly going to ensure that we have more criminals walking the streets and more crimes being unpunished. I was talking to a sheriff friend of mine a couple of days ago. All the state sheriffs got together last week. They're trying to figure out how to handle this new law. It was House Bill 1310. And then I saw a post on Facebook from the chief of police in Lake Forest Park, an area I know a little bit about. His name is Mike Harden, and he joins me live here on the Dory Monson Show. Chief Harden, I appreciate you coming on with me this afternoon.
It's great to talk to you. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, and I really appreciate you getting out the word from a cop's perspective on what this new law entails. So let me make sure I understand this. If somebody cracks another person over the head with a pipe, a lead pipe, and police roll up and there are people who say, that guy did it right there, unless the police actually witnessed it themselves or have probable cause besides a witness IDing somebody, you guys are very limited as to what you can do?
Well, that's a little complicated there because you actually described a little bit of probable cause. So if somebody's right there and says that person did that, you're going to lean more towards probable cause and the officers are able to arrest. What we have, we run more into scenarios of where we respond as officers to a crime that just was committed and the suspect has fled the scene and they have a description of who it is. And when we get there, we're now looking for this person. And when we find this person, it may or may not be who the victim was assaulted from.
Right.
And at that point, we're building our investigation, building reasonable suspicion, getting up to that probable cause statement to make an arrest and or standard. And when we get there, then we can make that arrest. What's happening with House Bill 1310 is it is taking away the ability to use force to detain somebody with reasonable suspicion. So now officers are now trying to reach that probable cause standard to actually put physical force or put somebody in handcuffs.
Okay, so it's just a much higher bar that officers must clear before they can detain somebody. And then what if a person just runs off before you've had a chance to talk to them and before you've had a chance to assemble that case that you're going to make against them? What if they just run off?
As the law will stand on July 25th, we would let them go.
And the word's out among criminals, I'm sure, as to how they can get away from committing crimes then, right?
Yes. And the thing that I want to express to the community is, first of all, my department is committed to transparency. That's why I put that message out. I wanted our community to know that the potential impacts of the new laws that it may have. But we are still going to do the best we can in providing a safe city. We're just going to follow the rules and the law with great customer service. We've done it years past. We get laws passed every single year, and we are able to adapt to those laws. Officers can go back years from ago that said, hey, you had to arrest people that didn't sign their citations. And then they took that away and said, you don't no longer need to arrest people that don't sign citations. We adapted and adjusted to it. Domestic violence, when the law came out that you had to arrest the primary aggressor, that was something that was new because it felt like it was taking away the discretion of the officer. We adapted and we been able to deal with it. We will do the same thing in these situations. So when we have somebody leave a scene, what it's just going to do is it's going to mean that we need more resources, it's going to take longer, and we're going to be a little bit more reactive.
Well, in what you wrote, I'm going to quote from you here. You said on Facebook, reaching probable cause before the officer can investigate is nearly impossible while responding to a 911 call. While an officer may see a vehicle or person that matches a suspect description, they may not use any type of physical force to stop them from leaving the area. So even if you're rolling up on somebody that you might have reasonable suspicion of, they can just take off and you're just not allowed to pursue under 1310?
So the authority to use physical force is the key here. I can roll up and I can say, hey, sir, you're being investigated for stealing from the store, shoplifting. They can say, okay, and they stop, and I have that authority to tell them to do that. If they say no and they take off running or they get into a car and leave, I don't have the authority to physically put my hands on them to stop and detain them. That has been taken away, and the standard is now, do I have probable cause to arrest them? In this particular instance that I'm talking about in the post and what you just said was it's the officer needs to investigate what's going on. They can't just simply get a call from 911 that says this 30-year-old white male has gone running out of the Rite Aid stealing alcohol. And we pull up and we see somebody that matches that description. We don't make an arrest right then and there. We have to build that probable cause before we can do that. And without the authority of detaining somebody, they can get away, and we let them get away.
Now, we're talking a lot about criminals here. There's another group that's going to be affected, and that's children. There are a lot of juvenile runaways. Tell me how that's going to be affected from a law enforcement standard.
A large part of the job of a police officer is obviously the criminal aspect, but the other part is community caretaking. And what we will likely not be able to do is make contact with cases like runaways, missing persons, emotionally disturbed people, things like that, those kind of incidents that police go out to. If they basically say, we're not going to stay, we're not going to talk to you, they can leave. So if a parent, for example, calls in and says, my 16-year-old has run away, and I feel like they're in this particular area of Edmonds, we go out to Edmonds, we find them in this area, and we bring them back normally. And we have the BECA bill that requires us to detain and return them to their parents. Unfortunately, if they go off running, we cannot physically detain those children because this is using force and it's not a crime.
Well, I mean, I'll give you an example from, this is several months ago now, but there was a guy on my block. He was right in the middle of the street, and it's kind of a windy road. It's a very dangerous place for anybody to be in the middle of the street. He was in the middle of the street. He was yelling. He was obviously, you know, in some kind of mental crisis. He was yelling. He, you know, was throwing his hands up in the air. I called and I asked if you guys, because I hadn't seen him commit a crime, but I asked if you could come out and do a welfare check. So can you still do that? Can you still come and do a welfare check?
Absolutely. So some departments are handling that through a triage through their dispatch. Some are handling it with their supervisors. Our approach is going to be through our supervisors. We're going to get every single call that 911 gets a call to. It will be dispatched, and our supervisors will triage that and say, what do we have? Overwhelmingly, we would go to that call. We would go find out what's going on. And 99% of the time, we're able to handle the call and get people resources and take care of it, de-escalate whatever's going on. But there may be a time where that person doesn't want help. We can't do any kind of force. If we wanted to send them to treatment through the hospital where they get an involuntary commitment and they need to go, we can't put hands on because it's not a crime. So there are going to be some situations where we will have to walk away and let medical aid or the fire department handle some of those issues.
Okay, so here's why. We just have a few seconds left here, but here's what's 100% undeniable. This House bill is going to mean more criminals on the street, more crime going unpunished, more people in distress not getting help they need. Do you think the legislature knew what they were doing when they passed this?
I don't have an opinion on that. My opinion is I'm going to take what the laws are, and my officers are going to do an amazingly compassionate job about customer service and dealing with whatever situation they have within the bounds of the law. And they've overwhelmingly done that for the entire time I've been with Lake Forest Park, and they will continue to going forward. And we will take whatever the legislature gives us, and we will act within the rules and the bounds of the law.
Okay. I do have an opinion on it, and I will say this is not the chief's opinion. There are a bunch of people in our legislature who have no clue what police work is like and about, and there are an awful lot of people in our legislature who are part of a move to try to destroy our society from within by tearing the very fabric of what keeps us together, and that is law and order. Chief Mike Harden, Lake Forest Park Police, the men and women who serve under you do a fantastic job, and I'm very, very appreciative.
They really do, and I just want to thank all the police officers. They've got to make the split-second decisions with all of these new changes that they've got to learn and train on, and they're going to do the best they can to provide the best service to not only our city, but every city in this region.
Amen. All right, Chief, thank you. Appreciate you coming on with me today.
Thank you.
Chief Mike Harden of the Lake Forest Park Police, starting next Sunday. Things are going to change, and the criminals get a huge advantage now. Whew, unbelievable. It's unbelievable what we have elected to Olympia and to so many local cities that have allowed this to happen. The destruction of our region continues, and we have lots more to come on the Dory Monson Show. Name in this, Sean?
Yeah. This is a song by the Foo Fighters called Sean.
Foo, and they even spelled it the right way. Yeah. S-E-A-N.
Yeah.
Just like you. Okay, so there's your Foo Fighters song called Sean. And I just have to explain, I'm horribly excited because a listener pointed this out to me. John Lithgow, the actor who's on, I think he was on Third Rock from the Sun or something like that. He has a song called Everybody Eats When They Come to My House. It's the first time I've ever heard my name used in a song.
Turn off the telly, Nelly. Come to the table, neighbor. Now sit up straight, Kate. It's time to eat, Pete. Have a banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy. Get with the gravy, Davy. Everybody eats when they come to my house. Try a tomato, Plato. Here's Cacciatore, Dory.
Yes!
Taste the bologna,
finally.
Tony. Everybody
finally
eats when they come to my house.
Set to music.
I your favorite dishes.
There are lots of Nicole songs out there, aren't there?
Nicole, Nicole, Nicole. Nicole, 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 Nicole.
What song is this?
The Nicole song.
Well, I mean, by who?
I think it's Sinatra. Yeah, I got to take a quick time out. We'll check the news for you. And then the big lead at 2 is coming up next.
Nicole.